let's start with the questions. And the first question I have is a multi-part question. And I will say all of the parts, and I can repeat them perhaps if necessary. But the first question is, how will the landscape of HIV care and treatment change for low-income and currently uninsured, underinsured people living with HIV as healthcare reform is implemented? How will this happen in urban environments, in rural and suburban areas? And how will we ensure that consumers of services have access to healthcare providers with HIV expertise as we mainstream HIV care and destigmatize HIV status? Not an easy question to answer, but I'm going to ask Andrea if she would like to attempt to answer it. Andrea.
Well, thank you. And I really want to, the bar has been set very high now with the introduction. So I will add, too, that I'm really looking forward to hearing from many of you on this and to get your input. So hopefully we'll have plenty of time for that. And just start by saying, you know, I think that the easy and short answer would be we don't know. But I'd quickly follow that up with right now we're at a really critical time. That's why it's so great you're hosting this forum. The CARE Coalition really want to commend you for that right now, because now's the time for us to start really helping to shape it. Because I think ideally, at least for me and others, when we think about this, it's a really great opportunity. And what it would look like is that everybody who has HIV would be diagnosed early because there's increased coverage for prevention. They'd be linked to care, like many of you are providing that state-of-the-art, really, you guys have been leaders in developing chronic disease management that's, you know, been supported largely by the federal government and by Ryan White. So the goal is to maintain the programs in that model of care and expand on it and get that care into urban, both urban and rural areas, where sometimes those resources are not as readily available. That what will change will be the financing. The financing will hopefully be more stable because it'll be tied to insurance coverage of some kind. And it will not be as dependent on discretionary funding. I think there'll be a clear role for Ryan White, and I know others will address that later, in helping to fill in the gaps. But overall, we'll have funding that will be tied to the demand for care. So what we need to do, and there's going to be a lot of work over the next few years, but it's to really build on this, brain trust and, you know, state-of-the-art programs that have been created with Ryan White funding. So we may, the programs right now, you know, we refer to them as Ryan White funded programs, but they really will hopefully emerge as centers of excellence for providing HIV care. And that includes the medical providers and the social service providers. And if you wade your way through the 1,000-page, you know, document for the new law, there's lots of new resources and opportunities for Ryan White, currently Ryan White funded programs to go after to support this model and to have new resources and diversified funding to support it. So that for me is the overall goal, is to really, you know, we have a high bar for care, and we want to raise it for others, and we want to expand it for people with HIV so everyone has access to it. Because we know the current system is not working, particularly as we have more and more people living with HIV. Now, there's a lot of work for us to do, and when I say us, I mean us, many of us here are advocates, but also for providers to do and get ready and to get up to speed and be prepared to access this funds and to contract with new plans, but also for the federal agencies who really should be promoting the Ryan White funded programs as models. And you know, even if you do look through the 1,000-page law, you'll see that the goal is to get people into care like what Ryan White programs are providing. So that, you know, is the overall goal. Some things we have to do, we have to make sure that programs have the TEA, so they have the know-how to contract with private plans and to get on and make sure they're on the networks of Medicaid programs and Medicaid managed care programs and be included in those networks. We need to really leverage, you know, the workforce issue is something that many of our members are deeply concerned about because they've been in it from the beginning and are going to be slowly moving on for one reason or the other. And there aren't new recruits coming in to take their place. But this is a great opportunity to draw new people into the field, as there are many more new resources going to workforce. But there are also new, really creative models. I don't know if anyone was at the session that was at 8:30 this morning that Dr. Arora and Dr. Williams from New Mexico presented on, which is a really exciting model for leveraging several centers of excellence to really co-manage patients throughout the state. And in New Mexico, it's through the community health centers, and they use teleconferencing to have weekly rounds. And it's much more than the typical telemedicine. It's actually the local physician actually increasing their knowledge base, so they end up becoming the consultant for the local area. So that's, you know, just one model that I learned more about being at this conference that I think is very exciting and is exactly the kind of model that some of the policymakers are looking at to really move towards a system that is based on, you know, looking at what the outcomes are, higher quality care, and more cost-effective care. So the provider issue is huge. I think another issue in terms of providers is we have our work cut out for us in terms of educating them, the primary care providers in particular, where we're trying to build capacity and expand capacity, and in addition to expanding their HIV knowledge and expertise to really educate them on HIV and reduce the stigma that unfortunately is still out there. And more prevalent in certain areas, and often those areas overlap with where we're seeing high incidence and high prevalence of HIV. So I'm sort of in an idealist mode right now, and I think we have a lot of work cut out for us, but we know what good care looks like, and many of you are doing that. And I think we're going to talk some more about how we can document that and ensure that we build on that rather than lose that as we move forward, because that would be really ironic if through the amazing passage of health reform, some people with HIV end up worse off.
Andrew, do you think there'll be differences in implementation with respect to urban environments, rural and suburban jurisdictions?
Absolutely. Absolutely, and it's not that there are unique challenges to each, and in particular from the service needs to developing the infrastructure, and that's why I think it'll be really important for providers and programs working in those areas to be involved throughout the process. I mean, a lot of this is going to be state-based, as the exchanges are state-based. We're going to see a lot more people in Medicaid, which has its challenges. I mean, it will be a more reliable source of coverage for people with HIV, because Ryan White is not an insurance program. But we have to make sure that translates into actual access to care and that it's not just coverage.
Do any of the other panelists want to address this notion of the changing landscape that Andrea might not have covered?
She covered it really well.
Okay.